Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva nirottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam udirayat. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Om namo bhagavate.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, chapter entitled The Prayers of Queen Kunti. Text number 6. Yaji twasya medaishtvam. Yaji twasya medaishtvam. Tribhya uttama kalpakai. Tribhya uttama kalpakai. Tadyasha pavanam dikshu.
Tadyasha pavanam dikshu.
Shatamanyo ivat nunit. Yajiyatva. By performing. Ashwamedhai. Jagya in which a horse is sacrificed. Tam. Him. King Yudhishthira. Tribhi. Three. Uttama. Best. Kalpakai. Supplied with proper ingredients and performed by able priests. Tat. That. Yasha. Fame. Pavanam. Virtuous. Dikshu. All directions. Shatamanyo. Indra. Who performed 100 such sacrifices. Iva. Like. Atanat. Spread. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Lord Sri Krishna caused three well-performed Ashwamedha Jagyas, horse sacrifices, to be conducted by Maharaj Yudhishthira, and thus caused his virtuous fame to be glorified in all directions, like that of Indra, who had performed 100 such sacrifices. Translation responsible. Lord Sri Krishna caused three well-performed Ashwamedha Jagyas. Horse sacrifices to be conducted by Maharaj Yudhishthira, and thus cause his virtuous fame to be glorified in all directions, like that of Indra, who had performed 100 such sacrifices. Purport. This is something like the preface to the performances of Ashwamedha Yagya by Maharaj Yudhishthira. The comparison of Maharaj Yudhishthira to the King of Heaven is significant. The King of Heaven is thousands and thousands of times greater than Maharaj Yudhishthira in opulence, yet the fame of Maharaj Yudhishthira was not less. The reason is that Maharaj Yudhishthira was a pure devotee of the Lord, and by his grace only was King Yudhishthira on the level of the King of Heaven, even though he performed only 3 yagyas, whereas the King of Heaven performed hundreds. That is the prerogative of the devotee of the Lord. The Lord is equal to everyone, but a devotee of the Lord is more glorified because he is always in touch with the All Great. The sun rays are equally distributed, but still there are some places which are always dark. This is not due to the sun, but to the receptive power. Similarly, those who are 100% devotees of the Lord get the full-fledged mercy of the Lord, which is always equally distributed everywhere. Omagyana Chidamanjasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurumilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaya Vidati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Yevacha Titanam Avinityo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare
Hare Rama
Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Maharaj Yudhishthira here is said to be as famous as Lord Indra because he has performed the Ashwamedha Yagya. It is not easy to perform an Ashwamedha Yagya. This is a horse sacrifice. There are 2 great sacrifices which are often mentioned in the Bhagavatam and in the other Vedic literatures, which are performed by the kings. One is the Rajasuya, which Yudhishthira also performed, and there is the Ashwamedha. So the Ashwamedha, in order to perform that particular sacrifice, one has to bring all the other kings in the world under his control. It can only be performed by the emperor. It cannot be performed by a less powerful king or someone who doesn't have full potency. It is only by the emperor himself, so it's difficult to perform. Because first of all, you have to conquer everyone in the world, or they have to submit to you. So, Yudhishthira, he had 4 very powerful brothers, Bhima, Arjun, Nakul, and Sahadev. So he sent them in 4 directions. One went north, one went west, one went south, one went east. And they conquered everything. And then they brought all of the subordinate kings under Yudhishthira's control. Either they conquered them, if anyone was willing to defy them. There weren't too many people who opposed them. Because if Arjuna's coming into your kingdom, usually you just offer respect. Not many people would actually dare to fight with Arjuna. And Bhima, so there wasn't much opposition, but if there was, then they were defeated. And then the subordinate kings had to pay a tax. They had to give wealth to the emperor so that he could perform the Ashwamedha Yagya. So everyone was supplying wealth to Yudhishthira. It was being collected by the 4 brothers. Over 1 year they travelled in the 4 directions. They took all the wealth from the subordinate kings, brought it back to Yudhishthira, and then he could perform the Ashwamedha sacrifice. So it was either Arjuna or Bhima travelled to the east. So if you come out east of India, then you go through Manipur and those type of states out through the eastern kind of direction. And then you travel down and the land is connected. through Southeast Asia. So then you go down through Laos, Cambodia, Thailand, down into Indonesia, all these areas. And then finally you'll come to the eastern point of Indonesia, and then you'll go across to Bali. So it's interesting because if you go to Bali from Australia, which is only 4 hours flight or something, it's not far from here to Bali, it's just above Australia. If you go there and you get off the plane and then you go out of the airport, on the roundabout outside the airport there's a 20-foot high Parthasarathi, how do you call it, like statue or like that, like huge diorama. So Krishna and Arjuna on the chariot being drawn by the horses, Krishna and, I mean this is in Bali. So then one would ask, why is Krishna and Arjuna in Bali? What are they doing in Bali? Why are they there? Same as in Cambodia. 70 years ago, some French archaeologists, they discovered a huge temple complex in Cambodia, which is known as Angkor Wat. Now, this particular temple which they discovered is the biggest temple in the world. It is bigger than any of the temples in India, the actual complex of the temple. It was huge. You've probably seen pictures of it. So this is in Cambodia. So when the French archaeologists, they discovered it, because this part of the world is a Buddhist area, Laos, Cambodia, a lot of Buddhism is there, then the French archaeologists, they thought, oh, this is a Buddhist shrine. It was kind of in the jungle, so it was half grown over like that. So when they discovered it, they thought, oh, this is a Buddhist shrine. It's huge. But when they began to clear everything away and they look at the bas reliefs on the temple walls, on the walls all around the compound, they saw pictures of the Ramayana. So it's a Hindu shrine. It was Hindu. And Bali, you see, it's a Hindu country. So this is because Yudhishthira, he sent Bhima and Arjuna, and I can't remember, it was either Bhima or Arjuna, travelled all that way, all the way down, conquered all the kings, all the way down to Bali, and then went back with all the wealth and gave it to Yudhishthira, and they performed the Ashwamedha Yajna. Even Srila Prabhupada said when he came to Australia, we call Australia Australia, but in Sanskrit it is very similar to Astralaya, place of the Astras. So Prabhupada said that the Kshatriyas used to come here and they used to test their Astras. That's why if you go from like the northwest of Australia, from Broome, if you come all the way down through Uluru, through Ayers Rock, all the way through South Australia, it's only when you get to the east coast there's actually a lot of greenery. Mostly. Most of the rest of it is like desert, like that. Apparently, Prabhupada said the Kshatriyas used to come and test their Astras, you know, to see if the Astras would work. They'd fire the Astras, and then just, you know, everything turned into desert, practically. So this is Astralaya. This is where we live. If someone says, where do you come from? You say, I'm from Astralaya. not Australia, mate. I'm not from Australia. I'm from Australia. And you have to speak Sanskrit. Not Aussie. Lingo. Not Australia, but Australia. This is where we're from, the place where the Astras were. So even the great Kshatriyas, they came here in the past. Someone has come here and they've stepped on this land. So this Ashwamedha Yajna, it is very difficult to perform. But Yudhishthira, he performed that yajna, and he did it 3 times. And he did it as the emperor of the earth. Now, Yudhishthira became as famous as Indra. It is said here in the Bhagavatam that Indra performed 100 Ashwamedha sacrifices, and Yudhishthira has performed 3, and yet he's become as famous as Indra. Actually, the Pandavas were more powerful than the demigods, because when Arjuna went into exile, before the battle took place, before Kurukshetra took place, the Pandavas were sent to the forest for 13 years. Is that correct? 13? Is that the correct number? Rama was banished for 14 years. Pandavas 13?
1 year incognito.
1 year incognito. 12, they were wandering, and then final year they had to be incognito. And then Duryodhana said, if we catch you, if we find you in that final year, we'll send you back for another 13 years. This was their cousin. You know, imagine having a cousin like this. You guys go for 13 years to the forest, and the final year, if we find you somewhere, then you have to go for another 13 years. So effectively, he was thinking, I'll just keep you in the forest for the rest of your life, and we'll enjoy the kingdom. You know, imagine having this kind of a family member like that. So when they were in that forest for 12 years, Arjuna spent 1 year collecting astras, or collecting weapons. He had to perform austerity or tapasya to get certain astras which he would need in the battle, to win the battle, because there's very famous warriors he had to fight in the battle. So he needed the astras. So he went for 1 year, he left the other Pandavas for a full year, and he went off to perform austerities. At that time, Indra came, his father, because Indra was Arjuna's father, and took him to Swarga, to heaven. And Arjuna was sitting on the throne with Indra. In heaven, he would sit next to Indra on the throne. And he was like a god. He was as powerful as the gods. Actually, he was more powerful. And there was one particular demon that the gods were having problems with. So Indra asked Arjuna, can you please go and conquer him? Go and conquer that particular demon so that we can then live peacefully here in heaven. So they had to get Arjuna to go and fight with the demons. So he was even more powerful than the demigods. So during this year, he performed great austerity, and he became very powerful. And then he even overtook the demigods in terms of potency, like that. It is said that when the battle was fought, when Kurukshetra was fought, all the demigods were watching from the sky. It's like these days we have, like, you know, AFL grand final. You have a grand final, and then, you know, the whole stadium gets, you know, filled up with people. So that's what it was like in Kurukshetra. All the demigods, the devatas, they were watching. They stayed in the air and they watched the entire battle. And it was more powerful than even what they could do, like that. So Yudhishthira, he surpassed Indra even in his potency. Now, Prabhupada points out, why is it that Yudhishthira became even more powerful and more famous than Indra? Because he was a devotee. So if you are a devotee, you will become empowered by Krishna. Because actually, everything that we do as devotees, it is simply by Krishna's kripa, or mercy, or shakti. Krishna vina shakti. It says within Chaitanya Charitamrita, if you do not have Krishna's shakti, or Krishna's potency, you cannot spread the Sankirtan movement. It is not possible to spread this movement unless you are directly empowered by Krishna. Now, how do we become empowered by Krishna? We become empowered by Krishna by preaching on his behalf. Actually, two ways. It's a twofold process. Prabhupada used to call it the ISKCON sandwich. It means in the morning we do sadhana, right? And in the evening we do sadhana. And in the middle we preach Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada said this is the ISKCON sandwich. You have a morning program, you have an evening program, and in the middle you preach Krishna consciousness. Now, if your sadhana is good, it means if you're chanting the holy name properly, you will become empowered by the holy name. And if you preach boldly on Krishna's behalf, you become empowered to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. So you'll see that Srila Prabhupada himself was the most bold preacher of Krishna consciousness. It was quite obvious that Prabhupada was the most empowered personality. No one in history, practically speaking, spread the Krishna consciousness movement more than Srila Prabhupada, because he was entirely bold in his preaching. Now, just like one time Prabhupada was taking a morning walk in Kolkata, and they were going past the Victoria Monument. Is that what it's called? Does anyone know in Calcutta? There's a big statue of Queen Victoria or something? Or something? It's a building dedicated to Queen Victoria. So it's some big building which is there or something. So Prabhupada was telling the devotees were walking past it, and Prabhupada was born in Calcutta. He grew up in Calcutta, and he was educated in Calcutta. And they were walking past the monument on a morning walk. Prabhupada was with some disciples. And Prabhupada said, when I was a little boy, they were building that huge monument or building, and they were scaffolding all the way up there. And Prabhupada said, I used to climb all the way to the top when I was a little boy. And the devotees said, Prabhupada, you are very brave that you would climb all the way to the top on the scaffolding. Even when I was in India a few years ago, I was staying at the hospital, which is run by the Chowpatty devotees in Mira Road, the Bhaktivedanta Hospital. So Radha Prayer and I were staying there, we were doing some Panchakarma treatment. And we're on the fifth floor, like high up, you know, five-story high. And there were some men painting the building outside my window on bamboo scaffolding. So the bamboo was going up five stories. You know, they're just not like here in the West, they have everything is metal and, you know, very secure. It was just all bamboo. So, you know, five stories high. And I looked out and they were painting, and the guy was just sitting there, just, you know, on a piece of bamboo, and he's just painting the wall. And I looked over and there was no net. You know, there's no safety helmet. Like in Australia, like they would shut the place down. You know, they would not let anyone work under those conditions. You know, occupational health and safety. There wasn't any occupational health and safety. there was nothing there. But he was just there on the he's just painting the wall, you know, and then he'd just move along, you know, stand up, just move along and just keep painting the wall. You know, he was just on a tiny bit of bamboo like this. You know, he was walking along, just painting the wall, and, you know, five stories high. And then I looked out the window later on, they're having their lunch. You know, they're sitting there just on the bamboo, just eating their lunch. Five stories high with their tiffin, and just, you know, tie their tiffin to their back and then just keep painting. Like that. So Prabhupada climbed up this huge scaffold when he was a little boy, up to the very top. And the devotee said, Prabhupada, you are very brave. And Prabhupada said, I am still very brave. He said, otherwise, how could I come to the Western countries and spread Krishna consciousness? He said, I am still very brave. So this is Prabhupada's mood. He was the greatest general, actually. Senapati Bhakta. It was actually predicted by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that Prabhupada would come. There's one famous book called Chaitanya Mangala by Lochan Das Thakur. And in there is a wonderful story. And Narad Muni is in Jagannath Puri in front of the Jagannath Diti. And Narad Muni, he is speaking to Lord Jagannath and he says, Kali Yuga has now come. So how will the conditioned souls in Kali Yuga be delivered in this age? They're so fallen. How will they be delivered? And then Jagannath, he says that there is a very special form of mind that will come in the Kali Yuga. So he said, you go to Goloka and you will see this form that will come in Kali Yuga. So Narada, he began to play his veena, began to chant, and then when he plays his veena, he travels on the sound vibration of the veena as he chants. So he began to chant and he began to travel and he stopped in Vaikuntha and he got to Vaikuntha and he saw Lord Narayan and Lord Narayan said, I told you to go to Goloka. So he stopped in Vaikuntha and then he was said, go further, go to Goloka. So he went to Goloka and when he arrived in Goloka, Krishna was there and he was sitting on a beautiful throne, like that, an asana, huge simhasana, beautiful throne, and Krishna was a golden color. Gauranga. Normally he is Shyam Sundara, but in this pastime he was Gaura Sundara. He was a beautiful golden complexion. And on one side there were many gopis, and they were passing water pots to Srimati Radharani, who was on one side, and on the other side Krishna's wives were passing water pots to Rukmini. So Rukmini was on one side, and Radharani was on one side, and they were passing water pots, and they were doing a beautiful abhishek of Gauranga. So Gauranga was sitting there, and he was enjoying the abhishek, being worshipped by all of his devotees. And then Narada came, and he saw this beautiful form. And this is the form. And then Gauranga said, in this age of Kali, I will come, and I will distribute the holy name of Krishna to deliver all of the conditioned souls. And he spoke to all of his associates and he said, all of us are soon going to go to the material world to spread the Sankirtan movement. And he said, some of you will come before me, before I appear, like Madhavendra Puri, Ishwara Puri, the Jagannath Mishra, like some will come before. And he said, most of you will come with me to assist me in my pastimes. And then he said, some of you will come after me to continue the preaching of the spreading of the Sankirtan movement. And then he looked at one of those devotees out of his many associates and he said, more Senapati Bhakta. He said, my Senapati, Senapati means my commander-in-chief, Bhakta. He said, that Bhakta, he pointed to one of his devotees, and he said, and that one, that devotee, he will come after me, and when all of the miscreants, when they cross the oceans to escape the Sankirtan movement, he will cross the oceans and he will follow them, and he will capture all of them in the net of the Sankirtan movement. And he will take the chopper, and I said like a chopper, like an axe. He will take the chopper and he will cut with that axe of the holy name, he will cut all of their material desires. So one person was pointed out, one of the associates was pointed out. And who would that associate be? Srila Prabhupada. So it predicted by Gauranga himself that he will come to this earth and he will preach Krishna consciousness. And he said, I will send them the Senapati Bhakta. I will send my commander in chief and he will spread the movement all around. Then Prabhupada said one time he had an argument with Krishna. He said, Krishna, I don't want to go. He said, I don't want to go. Because he said, I don't like performing austerities. He said, material world is very austere. He says, so much hardship down there. So it's not easy down there. He said, I don't want to go. And Krishna said, no, I want you to go. He said, but don't worry, I'll make it everything very easy for you. I will make it easy for you. You won't have to do austerity. You just go and preach and I'll take care of everything. So Krishna won the argument. So then Prabhupada came. But then it wasn't that easy. And then Krishna's tricky, so maybe he had some plan. But he sent Prabhupada. But then Prabhupada also said that he had a discussion with Krishna. And he said to Krishna, he said, I want to preach as a rich man. That's why for all those years, because he didn't come until he was 69 to America. All those years, Prabhupada was trying to build up his business. And it actually said on his palm, someone read his palm one time, they said he'd be one of the richest men in India. So Prabhupada had an argument with Krishna. He said, I'll go and preach, I'll go to the Western countries and I'll preach, but I want to go as a rich man. I want lots of wealth, so then I can easily preach. And Krishna said, no, I want you to go as a poor man. So they had the argument. And guess who won? He always wins. He always wins the argument. So he said to Prabhupada, no, I want you to go as a poor man. So then Prabhupada came as a poor man. Now why did Krishna do that? Because they glorified Prabhupada more. Right? Prabhupada arrived in Boston, right, with $8. Now, how about we give one of you $8, and a trunk full, 40 volumes of the first canto of the Bhagavatam, and we say, okay, go to Tasmania, or go to, where else is our movement not so spread? Go to, wherever, and you just start a worldwide movement. There you go, $8, right, and 40 Srimad Bhagavatams, and you just go and start a worldwide movement like that. So it glorified Prabhupada even more. That Prabhupada did something which no one else could have done. Why? Krishna Vina Shakti. He was empowered by Krishna. And what did Prabhupada write when he was on the Jaladutta? Prabhupada said, I have full faith in your holy name. I have faith in your holy name, Krishna. This was actually noted when Prabhupada took initiation, sannyasa initiation. When Prabhupada became a sannyasi, actually, Prabhupada didn't want to be a sannyasi. He said it. He said that's terrible. In Vedic, like when I teach Bhakti Vaibhav, I've been teaching like the last 7 years. I've been teaching the Srimad Bhagavatam class. There's two things that the devotees really don't like getting into. Whenever we read Prabhupada's purports, and there's certain things, and one thing they really don't like getting into is when you start talking about taking sannyas. Everyone just really does not. They don't get into it. The Indian devotees, they just do not get into it. You know, all the women start looking across at their husbands on the other side of the room, and they're not. people are not into it. It's not an easy thing to do, to become a sannyasi, right? Socially, it's terrible, right? It means you cut off your family, you cut off your wife, you cut off your children. Practically speaking, it's like it's severing everything in this world. It's considered like a terrible thing. So when Prabhupada, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his guru, appeared to him in a dream, and he said, "I want you to take sannyas," Prabhupada woke up from the dream and he said, "This is terrible." Prabhupada, how can I take sannyas? This is Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, "How can I take sannyas? How can I be a sannyasi?" And then Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur came a second time in the dream and said, "I want you to be a sannyasi." And then Prabhupada went to his godbrother, Keshava Maharaj, in Mathura, and he spoke to him and he said, "Yes, you should become a sannyasi." So then Prabhupada, then he began to accept the idea, and then he took sannyas. So you see that famous picture? Prabhupada standing there with Muni Maharaj. Right? There's Prabhupada, there's Muni Maharaj, and there's Keshava Maharaj sitting down, Prabhupada's sannyas guru in Mathura, when he took. So Muni Maharaj was 90 at the time. And there was a sannyas ceremony taking place. So he also took sannyas. At 90 years old, he also became a sannyasi to perfect his life. So when the sannyas ceremony was being performed, devotees were doing kirtan. You know, when we do the initiation ceremonies, you know, we do the kirtan. So the kirtan was going on, and then Prabhupada was accepting sannyas, and then one devotee was saying, whoever was leading the kirtan, one devotee was saying, just quieting down. And Prabhupada turned around and he said, no. Kirtan, more kirtan, like this. So that Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj, Prabhupada's godbrother, who was a Babaji, he said that he saw at that time when Prabhupada took sannyas, he said he had full faith in the holy name. And Prabhupada wrote that in the Jaladut diary when he was crossing the ocean, when he arrived in Boston. He said, "I don't know how I'm going to change them. How am I going to change these people? How am I going to turn them into devotees of Krishna?" He said, "They are so sinful, they are so covered by the modes of passion and the mode of ignorance. How can I make them into devotees?" But he said, "I have full faith in the holy name of Krishna. And because I have full faith in the holy name of Krishna, I cannot do it, Krishna, but you can do it. Your name can transform them. And we see what happened. Prabhupada arrived in 1965 in Boston. Right, and then he spent from 1965, 66, 67, right, and he was preaching in New York, and then some devotees went across to San Francisco, and some preaching was taking place there. But you see, up until 67, not a lot of devotees joined. The movement was still very small. There was a little shop front in New York. There was a little shop front in Hyatt Ashbury over there in San Francisco. You know, there wasn't a lot in the movement. And then Prabhupada became sick. Right? Because the winter in America was very austere. Prabhupada woke up one day in New York. He looked out the window of his building, and the building was white on the other side of the street. And Prabhupada said he thought someone had come in the middle of the night and whitewashed the building. You know, got some like paint and, you know, put it all over the building. But it was snow. Prabhupada had never seen snow before. You know, he grew up in India. He never saw snow. You know, the only place you see snow in India is when you go up into the Himalaya. Then you'll see some snow, but Prabhupada never saw it before. So he was living in that, and he was finding it very difficult. His health was suffering. So he went back to India, to Vrindavan, stayed in his rooms at Radha Damodar Temple, and stayed in the heat of Vrindavan, the hot summer, to make his body warm again and to bring his health back again. And then he came back again late 67, early 68, and that's when the movement really took off, that time. You know, that's when he started sending the devotees. The first devotees in 68 went to London. The movement started spreading. He starts teaching it, sending everyone to go to different temples. Today is the appearance day of His Holiness, Jaipataka Swami. So Jaipataka Swami came in 1968 to meet Prabhupada. So it was in Los Angeles or San Francisco, one of those places. So then he came. He went to the, I believe the story, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but he came to the Rath Yatra and he joined up straight away. Just came to the Rath Yatra and then he said, okay, I'm just becoming a devotee of Krishna. So he came to the temple. The day after he joined the temple, he shaved up. And back then, I heard Tamal Krishna Maharaj telling this story one time. He said back then, not many devotees were shaved up. You see a lot of the pictures, even in 1968, a lot of devotees weren't even shaved. First day, Jayaprakash Swami joined, just shaved up. And then he said to the devotees, he said, where is Prabhupada? Where is my guru? Where is Prabhupada? And he said, Prabhupada is in Canada. Was it Montreal? Montreal? He's in Canada, he's in Montreal. So Jayaprakash Swami flew there the next day. Been a devotee for 2 days. Joins up the first day, shaves up. Next day, gets on a plane, goes to Montreal. Arrives at the temple, shaved up, you know, wearing robes, right? Walks into the temple. Devotees, no one knew him. He just joined. You know, probably some devotees in Montreal weren't even shaved up, you know. So he just arrives, right? And then he said, I want to meet Srila Prabhupada. And then the devotees went to Prabhupada's room. Prabhupada was sitting down taking prasad. And they went to Prabhupada. He was just about to start taking prasad. And they said, one devotee has come to meet you, Prabhupada, from San Francisco. And Prabhupada, he looked, and then Jayaprakash Swami came to the door, and Prabhupada looked at him, and Prabhupada said, sit down. Sit down. And he sat down with Prabhupada and took prasad with Prabhupada. And Prabhupada saw him. Straight away, he said, sit down. Prabhupada was assembling his army. Because Krishna was sending. Prabhupada said, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was sending devotees to help Prabhupada spread the Krishna consciousness movement, empowered devotees, most powerful. And then Prabhupada gave him the name Jaya Pataka. What does Pataka mean? Flag. Jaya means victory. Victory flag. Like that. When you win the battle, you wave the flag. Jaya Pataka. So the victory. ISKCON spreading so much, the Sankirtan movement. Even a few years ago, Maharaj, his body became troubled, but then he didn't stop preaching Krishna consciousness. And actually, Tamal Krishna Maharaj said a number of years ago, he said that no one preaches in our movement as much as Jayaprakash Swami preaches. He's the biggest preacher in our movement. Because even now you see his body is going through so much difficulty, but still he's preaching non-stop. You know, we just get a little cut on the finger and practically our whole preaching stops. You know, we don't have that type of sincerity or that type of attachment to fulfilling the order of the spiritual master. But Jayaprakash Swami is so attached to Prabhupada, it cannot even be stopped. Even when the material body is practically, any of us would not recover from what he recovered from. We would not recover. But he has not just recovered. He doesn't stop preaching, and he just continues preaching. You know, every time I hear about him, he's in Moscow or he's in America or he's on. You know, he gives lectures on Skype, and thousands of devotees are watching him. You know, he lectures on Skype from America or somewhere, and there's thousands of devotees in another part of the world watching him. He will not stop his preaching. Unstoppable. So he's Jai Pataka, which means victory flag. Most powerful preacher of the Krishna consciousness movement. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj was telling a number of years ago in Mayapur, it was actually in Jai Pataka Swami's Vyasa Puja. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj was telling that he came down and he spoke when the Vyasa Puja was going on. And he said that in the early days, he said that Tamal Krishna Maharaj said that him and Jai Pataka Swami used to have a lot of leelas together. Because Jai Pataka Swami was the president of the Kolkata temple, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj was the GBC of India. So I think Tamal Krishna Maharaj said that he removed Jai Pataka Swami from being the temple president 17 times. Because Tamal Krishna Maharaj is a very expert manager, very powerful manager. So he would come, you know, travel, they're all traveling. Jai Pataka Swami is the TP of Kolkata. So 17 times he removed him. He'd come there and he'd see how he's managing and say, you know, this is not good enough. He'd remove him. Right? Say, you're not the TP anymore. And then Prabhupada 17 times reinstalled him as the TP. He said, no, I want him to be the TP. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj removed him. And then Prabhupada said, no, I want him to be the TP. So there's this whole leela going on between. So Jai Pataka, I remember Tamal Krishna Maharaj on the video. Tamal Krishna Maharaj was telling this story, and Jai Pataka Swami was sitting on his Vyasasan for his Vyasa Puja. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj and they're both laughing. And he said, we had a lot of leelas in the early days. And 17 times I removed him as TP, and then 17 times Prabhupada reinstalled him. He said, no, he must be the TP, like that. So they shared many, many pastimes in the early days. And then Tamal Krishna Maharaj was saying that Jai Pataka Swami, one time, Tamal Krishna Maharaj said he was in Mayapur for one of the festivals. I can't remember which festival it was, but he was there for one of the festivals. And he said that all day, the plan was that they would just do sadhana. So the whole day, Tamal Krishna Maharaj said they were going to chant, you know, like 32 rounds or 64 rounds. And he said they'd take, I think, him and Narasvara Prabhu. They took a vow that they would do 108 Dandavat Parikrams around Radha Madhava. If you've been to Mayapur, you know there's a parikram path around the back of the altar. So on that day, because it was a festival day, they did 108, did Dandavat Parikram around the deities 108 times. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, I was doing so much sadhana, that was my plan for that day to observe the festival, was to do sadhana. Was to chant extra rounds, 64 rounds maybe, and then do all these obeisances and worship the deity. And he said, Jai Pataka Swami, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was glorifying him. He said his program on that day is that he gave class in Mayapur that morning, and then he drove down to Kolkata, which takes about 2.5-3 hours, and then he gave a program there, and then he got on a plane and flew to South India to do an evening program in South India. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj said there's no other preacher in this movement like Jai Pataka Swami. He is the practically the most vigorous preacher. That's why they continuously have to change his servants, because none of his servants can keep up with his program. Where, you know, he travels and someone travels with him. These days he has about 4 people traveling with him, and people can't keep up. They have to continuously change the servants, because Maharaj just keeps. Even Bhakti Tirtha Swami, before he left this world, he went traveling with Jai Pataka Swami. He had to give up after about 6 weeks. He just couldn't keep up. The pace was just too intense. Jai Pataka Swami was just going next place, like that, just to spread the holy name. So Prabhupada, he was chosen by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to come here and to spread this Sankirtan movement, and he was empowered. He had full faith in the holy name, and he was empowered to spread Krishna Bhakti everywhere. And then Prabhupada said that many followers came, many empowered disciples were given to Prabhupada by Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur. Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur was sending these empowered servants to help Srila Prabhupada spread this movement. So as it says here, Yudhishthira becomes more famous than Indra. Why? Because he's a devotee. And the devotee gets directly empowered by Krishna to perform things that other people cannot perform. So especially when we preach Krishna consciousness, if we're brave and if we're bold, then we can become empowered by Krishna to spread the Sankirtan movement. But in order to become empowered, you have to have good sadhana. That means that your chanting has to be strong. You need both things. You need strong sadhana and you need a bold preaching spirit. But on our platform, if we don't have both, then we will crumble. You can try to preach and you can try to do so much preaching, but if you don't have a strong sadhana, you won't be able to sustain yourself. You won't maintain your strength in Krishna consciousness. So both have to be there, strong sadhana and then bold preaching. And this attracts the mercy of Mahaprabhu, and then he empowers that devotee. Prabhupada writes a letter and he says, if you want to become recognized by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then preach boldly, like Prabhupada. And one time a devotee wrote to Prabhupada, and the devotee said, Prabhupada, how do we become, how do we repay the debt to you? As disciples, how do we repay our debt to you? And Prabhupada said, actually the disciple cannot repay the debt to the guru. He cannot repay the debt. But Prabhupada said, if you want to try, he said, then preach boldly like me. And then some way we can repay that debt. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says in the Adi Leela of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he said, I am a gardener and I have so many fruits of love of Godhead and I want to distribute this to everyone in the world. But I'm one man, I can't do it all alone. So I need the help of so many others. So if we help Lord Chaitanya spread this Sankirtan movement, we will become blessed by him unlimitedly. And then Prabhupada said to Tamal Krishna Maharaj in Mumbai, on the balcony of his room, up in the Prabhupada's rooms in Mumbai, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj was complaining to Prabhupada. And he said, Prabhupada, he said, it is so difficult. He said, every day we have to go to the lawyers because they were having that whole court case to win the Juhu land. And he said, Prabhupada, we have to go to the lawyers every day and we spend 12 hours in the office and it's so difficult, so austere. I'm a sannyasi. And he said, I don't even know the shlokas of the Bhagavad Gita. He said, I know more of the Bombay municipality codes. I know more of the codes in my memory than I do the Bhagavad Gita shlokas. So he was saying so many things. He said, Prabhupada, it's so difficult. So then Prabhupada cut him short. And Prabhupada said, for so many lifetimes, you've served so many masters. In this one lifetime, you just served Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And whatever you are lacking at the time of death, Lord Chaitanya will cover that and he will take you back home, back to Godhead. So this is, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj used to tell that story more than any other story. I've listened to his lectures for years. He tells that story again and again and again and again. That is our hope as devotees. Just spread the Sankirtan movement. Get off the mental platform and stop worrying about your mind and your material desires and spread the Sankirtan movement. And at the end of your life, you might get something very special. Like that. So, okay. Any questions or comments?
Like you were mentioning how Prabhupada was so bold and he expressed the movement worldwide. In our context, what does it mean to be, you know, preach boldly? Obviously, we can't. We cannot stay in power. We can't go through. But in our context, what does it mean?
It means to just preach to the best of your ability. It means to somehow or other organize preaching, like all of you are doing. You're already doing it. So it doesn't always necessarily doing more preaching. It's making that preaching better. So the preaching you're doing, make it more effective and make it even better. That should be the standard. And then if you can, expand it. Prabhupada said when he left this world in 1977, he said, if you can't expand what I've done, at least maintain it. So we've done that. Since Prabhupada left, ISKCON has been maintained. Actually, it's expanded. It's a lot bigger than when Prabhupada was here. So Prabhupada would be very happy. So either we expand it, if we can, or at least we maintain it, and we make it better and better. Just like on Lord Ramachandra's feast the other day, I was in Mwulumbar, for the Dhruvananda Prabhu, Atul Krishna Prabhu's son got married, so I flew up for the wedding and it was on Ramachandra's appearance. So they cooked a very nice feast for Lord Ram, and in the evening we all sat down to have the feast. The problem was it was served out terribly. You know, I'm sorry if anyone from New Govindana is listening to this lecture, but I told the devotees. I said, it was a very nice feast, but it wasn't served out very well. So I said to one of the devotees, and he said, yeah, we're having a meeting tomorrow, so I'll bring that up at the meeting. So if we can't expand things, at least make it good. At least what we're doing now, at least make that good. You know, at least make all the services that we do here in the Melbourne Temple, at least make them first class. If we're doing accounts, make it first class. If you're doing preaching, make it first class. If you do book distribution, make it first class. If you do pujari work, make it first class. If you wash the pots, make it first class. If you clean the temple, make it first. Whatever you do for Krishna, make it the best. Like that. So at least do that. And then if we can expand, things will naturally expand anyway. Does that answer your... You had a question? Or?
I just comment. That story about Shiva Prabhupada didn't want to take actually sannyas. I heard the story from that he actually said, I'll take sannyas if this devotee was 90 years old. If he takes sannyas, then I'll take sannyas. And then the devotee heard that and said, yeah, sure, I'll take sannyas. Just started from Shiva Prabhupada and take sannyas.
Muni Maharaj. Yeah, 90 years old and he took sannyas. You see him standing there with Prabhupada behind Keshava Maharaj. So, any other question or comment? There's so many pastimes with Maharaj that one time I know Maharaj was responsible for doing these Nam Hatha programs all over Bengal. So he spread the movement all over Bengal. And I remember one devotee, Radha Damodar Prabhu, who was a disciple of Maharaj, who used to travel with him on these programs. So they used to go out and, you know, Maharaj would set up the Pandal programs. You know, Maharaj would go out personally and he'd cultivate these programs all through the 80s, all through the 90s. So one time, Radha Damodar Prabhu said they were out doing the program, and the program is that they have kirtan and they have lecture and they have kirtan and they have lecture, and it goes on for hours and hours. It goes all day and then goes into the night. Goes on for hours and hours. So Maharaj would get devotees from all over the world to get onto the stage and speak. So some devotee from this country, some devotee from that country, and everyone would get up and speak. They have to give like a mini class or tell about themselves, and then Maharaj comes up at the end. You know, and then he walks up through the crowd. You know, and then he sits down and he gives like the final lecture. So they had these programs, and because they had them just out in the fields or wherever they had them, then they have to, you know, power everything with a generator. So the generator stopped working at about 4 PM or something. So then the program kept going on, but they didn't have the generator, so the mic wasn't working. There's thousands of people there, so they had to. So anyway, Radha Damodar Prabhu said that, you know, they hadn't seen Jivatarka Swami for hours, you know, for between 4 o'clock and 8 o'clock, they hadn't seen him, and everyone was wondering, where is he, what's he doing? And Radha Damodar Prabhu said he was wondering, where's Jivatarka? Like, we've got thousands of people here, and where's Maharaj? And so finally they found him, and he was under the generator with a spanner. He'd been there for 4 hours trying to fix the generator. You know, because that's what he'd been doing for years. You know, he runs these programs. He does everything on these programs. He's not, you know, just a person who goes out and just does the final lecture, but he runs the whole program, makes sure the generator's working. You know, he ran these programs for years, so he had to fix the generators. And so 4 hours underneath the generator with the spanner, you know, trying to fix it, and finally got it working. You know, got the whole thing, you know, and the generator started, and then all the lights came on, and then Maharaj just, you know, walks on the stage, sits down and starts giving his lecture to thousands of people. You know, pulls out his big wampas. And then just starts preaching the Sankirtan movement. I remember in 1994 we went on Navadvip Mandal Parakram, and then Maharaj, he went down to the Jalangi, and wherever Maharaj walks, he's got like, you know, dozens of people following him. So he went down to the Jalangi, and then dove into the Jalangi. He's such a powerful swimmer, and if you look at the Bhagirathi, the actual Ganga, like outside of ISKCON, the big one. Like when Jivatarka Swami was young, he used to swim over and back regularly. You know, just swim all the way over. He's powerful. Like he's powerful. I remember one time he was here in Melbourne after Prasad. He was sitting down after Prasad, and then he said to, he looked at all these disciples, about six disciples, and he said, "Okay, help me get up." So they all came over, like, you know, six of them men, you know, and they were all lifting him, and they couldn't move him. He was just sitting there. And they're all like, they were really trying to get him up, and he was just sitting there, you know. He's so strong, so powerful. And when he wanted to get up, he just got up, and then he just walked out. But they'd be so powerful, so strong. So he went down the Jalungi, and he dove into the Jalungi, and he was swimming across the Jalungi, and every time he did a stroke, he'd say, "Gauranga." And everyone would say, "Gauranga." And he'd go, "Gauranga." And he was just swimming across the river. "Gauranga." And he just had the whole river chanting. You know, hundreds of devotees, where everyone was swimming. And he was just, "Gauranga. Gauranga." He was just like a, so powerful. Actually, one pastime I just remember is very funny. It was, we're on the boat, and we're going up the Ganges. All the devotees go on the boat, and we're all travelling up, about 40 devotees. So I was Tamal Krishna Maharaj's servant on that parikram. So I was sitting with Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Prabhu Vishnu and Prabhu was sitting there, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and at the other end of the boat was Jayapataka Swami, and he was kind of in charge of the whole Navadvipa parikram. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj is known for being, you know, very good manager. So, you know, whatever they were doing on the parikram, he was saying, "Oh, this should be done, or that should be done, or, you know, do it like this, do it like that." So then Tamal Krishna Maharaj, like Jayapataka Swami, was right up the other end of the boat, so Tamal Krishna Maharaj called Jayapataka Swami's servant. So you kind of, you know, on a boat, and we're all going up the river, and it's packed, and so he's kind of, you know, trying to get through all the devotees, you know, coming all the way. And he came down, Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, "You know, tell Jayapataka Swami this. You know, we should be doing this on the parikram." So the devotee would go all the way back up to Jayapataka Swami and tell him, Tamal Krishna Maharaj said this. And Jayapataka Swami said, no, we're going to do it like this. So then the devotee come all the way down. So they're having this conversation going back and forth, you know. And Prabhu Vishnu Prabhu was just sitting there, and he was just laughing, you know. It's like they're going back and forth. And then at the end, because I was next to Tamal Krishna Maharaj, at the end, Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, "Anyway, he might be the Kshatriya, he might be the king, because he's like Jayapataka Swami, he's like the king in Mayapur, you know, so powerful, you know." He said, "He might be the king, but I am the Brahmana, and the Brahmana is more powerful than the king." So he said, "You tell him." So then they went back up. It didn't get changed anyway, but it was just funny, the whole leela they were having, you know, between the two of them. So yeah, I mean, just everything about Maharaj, it's larger than life. I mean, he's an extraordinary personality. He's not an ordinary living entity, you know. He's obviously empowered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You know, Gaura Prem emanates from his personality. And if I speak later today, during the program, I'll say a few more things about him like that. I'll try to say something. I've got to try not to cry. It's too hard when you start speaking about it and then, you know, emotions come and then useless. I've got a lot of things to say, but it's hard for me to say them. Because when you start speaking to all this, I must have been a Bengali in my last life. I cry like Bengalis do all the time. What's that?
Bengali mother.
Yeah. I eat like a Bengali and I cry like a Bengali. So. That's my only qualification. So, any other question or comment? Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Jayapataka Swami ki. So the Vyasa Puja will begin at 11 o'clock. So all the devotees, if you're not doing any other services, and if you're available, please attend.